fact, this is actually a preview. We have a spoiler card, and it's happening before the episode. Spoiler time. Get ready. What?
Oh, my God. It's all happening. This is so crazy. This is how we're going to do the whole episode. Whoa.
No. That's it. We're done. But, guys, get ready. So we got permission from Wizards to spoil our card a week early. We were supposed to record it next Thursday, but because of reasons that we will soon explain, they said they kind of wanted to do something fun and let us spoil it early. So we're getting to do that. Our spoiler card is about to happen. So make sure to stay tuned afterwards. There is a 10 top 10 black cards episode. We go over each of the new mechanics from the new set, but right now, spoiler time. If you want to check out the picture of what the card is, make sure to go to our Instagram, Twitter. We'll probably post it on Reddit. It'll be on our Patreon, all those cool places. So go check it out there. But most importantly, get ready. It's time for the Masters of Modern Amaket spoiler. It is.
And you know what? Just before you do it, okay. I'm just gonna I know this is right. I know people are like, come on, man.
You just slow rolled it, everyone.
Slow roll hard, but I just want to say really quickly a massive thank you to Wizards of the Coast, because we always dreamed as kids of being part of the community who got to break news, refreshing the web pages of like the Chinese translation of some weird common from the new set. We wanted to know what it was. Like, that's the level of fiendishness that we all have for new cards, I know, and we just are so appreciative of the great cards that we're getting to spoil. So this is a really exciting one, and thank you to Wizards of the Coast. Yeah. All right, Kes, what do you got?
All right, so it's making history. This is the first time a card that has been printed as a treasure is also a reprint in the set, and that is Aven, Mind Sensor. I said it right this time.
You said it right this time.
Oh, yeah. Impressive. This is the third time we've recorded this. I've said the card wrong in that moment every time wrong. I keep saying Aven, Mimeomancer. It's Mind Sensor. 2-1. For those who don't know what the card does, it is a 2-1 flash flying bird wizard for 1 white and 2 colorless. And it has the ability that opponents, if they were to search their library for a card, they instead only search the top 4 cards of their library. It is the original Hate Bird future set card. Probably one of the big uncommon misses from multiple Modern Masters. It's finally here, and it's standard legal. It is moved up to rare, so that's the big new change, is that it is now a rare card. But it's here. Spoiler time. Aven, Mind Sensor. Get hyped.
Sweet. Totally sweet. Yeah, as you said, it was the first Hate Bird. There's been three. The best of the three Hate Birds. Though all three are quite good, really.
Yeah, I think... Does the one that is prevents end of the battlefield effects, is that a flash card also or no?
I don't actually think either of the other two are flash.
Yeah, I think the flash is like kind of the big one. You kind of need to be able to surprise your opponents with your hate birds, and this one really lets you kind of accomplish that.
Yeah, it's cool too. Also, what this card being reprinted suggests as far as the sort of bird totem god theme of Amaket, I think that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I have a feeling we're gonna get a lot of like creature humans. So we're going to get a cat. You're going to get some cat warriors. We're going to get some alligator warriors. We're going to get some bird warrior wizards. It's going to be sweet. I'm excited.
All I can keep thinking of, because on Action Movie Anatomy we just did Anaconda, is how he like sees the snake and he's like, ancient tribes used to worship anacondas, giant snakes. And there's like a big totem that looks like people worship it, because John Voight's awesome in that movie. And I wish, I mean, there won't be snakes, because they've done that already, but you say worshiping birds and alligators and like warriors, I just think of a giant snake.
One of the gods is this giant snake.
Really?
Yeah, it's a big cobra.
So we are going to get that. It's just like in Anaconda.
Yeah. No, the movie Anaconda is on Amaket. That's where it takes place.
Sweet. I'm so
spoilers. Jennifer Lopez is in this set.
Yeah, Jennifer Lopez.
John Hoyt.
Set. There's a masterpiece printing of her in Selena. It's in the set.
All right. Oh, man. So many layers. Okay. So thanks, guys, for listening. We have a great episode coming up for you right now. Top 10 black cards. We also go over Amaket's new mechanics. Thanks once again to Wizards for spoiling these cards. Fatal Push this. All the cards have been really super sweet and modern playable, which is just the perfect, because we're a modern podcast. And we thank all you guys, fans. Make sure also to, if you're going to the GP this weekend, shout out to Ben. We're doing a cool meetup. I'm not going to be there, but Ben is. I'm in Ohio visiting the place of my birth, while Ben is going to go sling some sweet spells.
Excuse me, sweet, guys. If you go to our Twitter, at the MMCast, the correct information for the meetup was just posted like a few hours ago. Yeah, or I guess when you hear this, it'll be yesterday, but it's a tweet, a quoted tweet that's got the location, the time, and everything.
Well, I'm assuming
if you can't find that.
I'm assuming you'll keep tweeting it out day of. So if you're
the
GP,
so follow me personally then at Ben Bateman Media if you want to like tweet at me and make sure I see you or hear you, because it'll be really fun to meet up and we're gonna have a dinner and hang out and get to chat magic and do all those things. So I'm really excited for the tournament. It's gonna be awesome. I may or may not be playing Aven Mimeomancer, just kidding. Aven Mind Sensor. I'm super jazzed for this tournament. It's going to be amazing.
Guys, I can't believe they gave us Aven Mimeomancer for this set. Who would have thought that they put a blue-white one wizard that makes 3/1s?
Yeah, I couldn't believe that. I didn't think that they were going to give us such a sick card.
It's card is sweet. Card should, yeah, I don't know. All right, Mind Sensor, it's the best. I know, I love Aven Mimeomancer. He's he makes little buddies. He's a 3/1 flyer, and he makes other 3/1s. Everyone's hanging out.
Sweet.
Yep, but the card in the set is Mind Sensor. Make sure to check it out. The art's really cool. And we'll see you guys after the theme music. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. Okay, I'm not going to.
Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Mock.
So we're done.
Music. And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's up, everybody? Happy Monday morning. Actually, it's not. You're hearing this on Friday, but happy...
Or the weekend.
Yeah, or the weekend. Yeah. But happy this week.
I think if you were expecting for the Masters of Modern podcast to come out on Mondays every week, you won't be disappointed ever by us.
Yeah. It's like, this is the process, guys. We'll explain it very, very simply for you. And honestly, this is going to change very soon. But historically, the process would work like this. Alex and I get together on the day of the week that is convenient for both of us to be in the same room, because we don't really like to Skype record the show. Even though people do that in podcasting, we like to be in the same room together.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Then we take the SD card, and Alex takes it, and when he has time, edits that SD card, and sometimes it comes out on time. But we also have to send it to the person that manages the server and post the episode.
And if he's out of town, then...
So there's like three different steps that if anything gets in the way, it gets delayed by a day, yep. Sometimes two, which is why if you used to think this came out on Tuesdays, then Wednesdays, then Thursdays, then Fridays...
It's back to Mondays.
We're almost back to the original day.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
If you just kept listening to it on Mondays, you'd be fine.
But sooner than later, we have big news coming up soon, and it's going to eliminate all of this. So it'll be exciting.
Yeah.
When it happens.
Sweet.
Yep.
All right. So... Today we have news because there's some sweet spoilers out for Amoket. We got in our top 10 black cards. We're finishing off the 5 episodes that we're going to do, the top colors episodes.
Yeah, we haven't done these in a long time.
Oh, we did. We did green in the fall.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just looked through them to make sure we hadn't done black before.
This is the only one, but we still haven't done
all the other four.
We haven't done artifacts or lands, right?
We've done artifacts.
Oh, really?
We haven't done enchantment lands, planeswalkers. We only did artifacts in our permanent type, like, cycle.
Of course we did artifacts, because that's the famous Spellskite episode before you respected the power of the Skite.
Yeah.
Didn't you have Spellskite at, like, 9?
Yeah, I had affinity cards ahead of it.
And I had, like, number 2 or
something? No, it was, like, 5.
I think I had, like, number 2.
You just were mad because I put, like... Ornithopter over Spellskite.
It's absurd. An absurd
move. I think I put Darksteel Citadel over Spellskite.
Yeah, you're ridiculous.
Yeah, Darksteel Citadel is sweet.
Yeah, it's a good card. It's a good card, but not as good as Spellskite. Speaking of which, actually, in my game of Mental Magic on Anchor, even though it was turn 4, I cast a Spellskite. I had access to 4 mana and any card in the history of Magic that I wanted to cast, but I cast Spellskite.
That's so silly and wrong.
It didn't really go the way that I was hoping it was going to go. But in my mind, I was like, I'll set up for some sweet combo here.
And like, Kira seems better in that format.
Yeah, but it wasn't a creature thing. I had this idea that I was going to play Delusions of Mediocrity.
Okay.
Delusions of Grandeur. Illusions of Grandeur, and then donate it. Which I still think I could do, except that when you have access to every single removal spell ever, I was like, I'll play Illusions of Grandeur, and then he'll Hull Breach and just ruin me.
Well, I mean, you just gain 20 life and lose 20 life. You just start back where you were.
Yeah, but I just lose both my turns because they
true.
Didn't
yeah,
do anything.
Double time walked you. Ooh. So, yeah. So, let's get to news, and then we'll get into the top 10 black cards, and then we'll do our normal top 5 battle where we all list off what cards should be played and people vote for it.
Absolutely. It's always fun to have you guys chime in on this one. So find us on Twitter. We're at the MMCast. I'm Ben Bateman Media.
I'm at Kes Wiley. We are at the MMCast, which you said already, and we should go to collected.company to check us out. And The Command Zone, our sister podcast, who does really sweet content every week, doing Commander content generally, but then they also do a lot of video content on their YouTube channel, and they do stuff with the professor, where you know, Josh argues with him and they debate over a specific subject matter.
Yep.
And just all around awesome content from those guys. And then make sure to check out our Patreon. It's how Ben is going to this GP, and it's how we do really anything beyond sitting in these chairs and talking at this. And really, it's the even that, you know, these mics have been replaced thanks to the Patreon. These cables go bad regularly, so we have to replace them. So there's just an upkeep cost that that helps us pay for, and it helps us kind of continue being motivated to do this. So we really appreciate it, guys.
Without the Patreon, we literally just pay money out of our pockets to show up and record this, which is fun, but it's much more helpful if you guys want to keep listening, if you can throw a buck or two a month to help us do it.
Right.
It's really
right.
Actually keeps us in business. Yeah.
We have 55 Patreons right now, and we love all of them, and we want them to have more friends to hang out with. So you guys should all join as well.
Yep.
beyond that. Oh, wait, you have one more thing?
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to thank George Ellison. He's our newest patron. He has joined at the swag box level, which is awesome. We're so excited, and we have an awesome thing we're going to send you. So George Ellison, thank you so much for the support. You're a true badass. Very cool. And we're going to get into our episode now.
What fictional action movie universe does George Ellison belong in?
George Ellison. He probably belongs in Total Recall, it feels
okay.
like.
Okay.
Why? Do you think there's a different one?
No. You're the action movie expert, so I had no opinion.
You know, speaking of that, actually, later in the episode, we're going to go to... I'll talk a little bit about Anchor a little later in the episode, but we're going to do Anchor Call the week later. And there was an awesome phone call, or call-in, that's the way it works, that we're going to play, and I'll explain what it is later, but it just reminded me of it, because the action movie thing.
Okay.
So let's get into our top 10 black cards.
No, we're doing news...
Oh, yeah, yeah, right.
That's like the news thing that like Fully. News chase stations used to do back in the day.
Let's just start this over.
No. This is great.
Trust me.
We're 5 minutes in. We're fine. Shh. I'm leaving all this in too.
You're going to need so much
spoilers.
Editing.
No. We're good. One edit. Okay. So, spoilers. The main thing is cycling is back. That's really exciting.
I love cycling.
Amokat's bringing cycling and -1/-1 counters. We haven't been to a -1/-1 counter set since Scars of Mirrodin.
Really?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Wow. I guess you're right.
Innistrad was +1/+1 counters. Zendikar was +1. Sorry, not Zendikar. Well, Zendikar was +1/+1 counters, but Innistrad followed by Ravnica, followed by Theros, followed by Dragons, followed by... Yeah, no, this is the first -1. This is the first time we're going to have cards printed that say -1/-1 counters that are standard legal since then.
Were the last two times they did -1/-1 counters?
Lorwyn and
Scars?
Scars.
I don't even think it was Lorwyn. I think it was Shadowmoor Eventide. Yeah, yeah. I think it was Shadowmoor Eventide. And then, wow, so only two times in the last decade they've done it?
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah, see, that's why I was... I don't think you were like understood why I was like excited about -1/-1 counters.
I like -1/-1 counters.
They're the sweeter counters. They do things.
Yeah,
it's not just like, oh, I'm a big beefy creature. It's like, oh, I like am paying something for a thing, or I'm making you smaller.
You know, this is something that I'm confused about. And
then maybe it's possible that there was like an M set that had -1/-1 counters, but I can't think of one.
I'm confused about something, and I've always been confused about this, and I think I've even talked about it on here before.
Okay. Yeah,
but with -1/-1 counters, so when you have a -1/-1 counter on something, and then you put a +1/+1 counter on it,
they cancel each other out as a state-based action.
Yes, which I've never understood because I feel like you would just have both counters on there. So then if I had some way to remove a -1/-1 counter, my creature would still have a +1/+1 counter.
It's a confusion. Like, the gameplay is better. Yes, that like there's interactions you lose because you do that, but gameplay as a whole is just better.
I get it. Like, it's you, but like it just...
You'd have to have two colored dice that are different. What if you have two -1/-1 counters and one +1/+1 counter? How do you know which dice is which?
I know. I find it...
The same reason they've like cut out all like... -0/-1 counters and +2/+1 counters.
It feels confusing, equally confusing in my mind to have it the way that it is because in my mind, I'm like, okay, I know that I've done this to interact with that thing.
There's a single moment where it's confusing versus a continuous moment that's
right.
confusing.
I mean, it works just fine. It's always confused me, and I wonder if anybody listening to this has the same confusion because it's never made sense. Like, yeah, anyway.
And then cycling, last time cycling was in standard was right in the middle of those two sets that had -1/-1 counters was Scars Block.
Yeah.
Shards Block.
Shards Block.
Shards
right.
and Scars.
Shards and Scars. Because, Shards was before. You had...
Cycling.
Yeah, yeah, and you had all the land cycling, basic land cycling and whatnot, and then you also had regular cycling.
Basic cycling, I think, was their like advanced version of cycling, kind of like how Mega Morph and.
Do you think there's any chance they would reprint either of the enchantments from Onslaught Block, Astral Slide, or the other one, the red one?
Well, this demon has like a similar. It's whenever you cycle or discard another card, put a -1/-1 counter on each creature your opponent controls. So I think they're going to have those type of effects. I don't know if they'll go full Astral Slide.
What was the white one was Astral Slide, and the other one was something Rift, right? Wasn't it Lightning Rift? Was that what it was called?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, those are sweet. And then what was the thing that restricted that reduced cycling costs?
I don't even know.
It was called.
I didn't play in that era, so I couldn't tell you. I've like played with these cards randomly, and I know them.
There's an artifact called. It's called Fluctuator. Fluctuator reduces cycling costs by one or two, I think.
Got it.
Yeah. Anyway, I wonder if they'll bring those cards back. I kind of feel like not, because it's an issue to have powerful cycling cards like that, where it's like, okay, we should just build the cycling deck.
Oh, I hope we get a cycling land.
Yeah.
I hope we just get one. Like, I want Life of the Lone to have a cycling land.
I guess we don't have a single cycling land. Yeah, like I guess they just never gave us any of the cycling lands.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, we got a lot of mechanics spoiled today, but we don't know what most of them do. So there's like Embalm, which is on this card 2 and a white. I have no idea what it does.
Yeah, Embalm. It's like, I mean, obviously it's in reference to like some sort of zombie. Mummy type of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it any coincidence, do you think, that the mummy movie relaunch is going to come out this summer at around the same time as Amicat?
I think that's a total. I think that's like there's like a long history of recorded moments where pop culture all does the same thing at the same time.
Yeah,
like it's just like there are moments where this happens. I think this is a total coincidence. I think like the vampires on Innistrad becoming popular were a definitive answer to Twilight and True Blood.
Yeah.
You
think the mummy thing is?
I think this is just total. Because I'm excited for that movie. Don't get me wrong, but I don't think that it's going to be culturally significant.
there are certain like moments in my life when things happen and it feels like everything lines up just the right way. For instance, Rock of Ages starring Tom Cruise, hair metal, and Tom Cruise in the same movie.
Yeah, but the movie wasn't good.
It's horrible. I never watched it. I've just seen the Tom Cruise scenes on YouTube.
The trailer existed.
Yeah, he's great though. But. This is another one where I'm going to have a new magic set that is mummy themed, and I'm also going to have Tom Cruise starring in the mummy movie at the same summer.
That's why you're excited about this movie. I rewatched. No, I didn't. I remembered, but now I'm like putting it all together.
Brendan looks so disappointed.
Brendan Fraser is just the perfect.
You know that they're not related at all, right?
Yeah, I know. They have nothing to do with this. No. This mummy is actually related to Dracula Untold,
yes.
That terrible movie from 2 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Making the movie monster universe.
Yeah, so it's not a remake of the universes. Brendan Fraser. Yeah, yeah.
There's like 10 Power Rangers cycled out. They like already have like 6 Godzilla movies to go past Kong Skull Island. But yeah. Beyond those. Oh, yeah, other abilities. There's this dragon has an ability on it. Where is it?
It's called Exert.
Exert. And what do you think the Exert thing is?
Well, all right, so the card reads red, red, and 3 for a 4/4 flying haste that when it enters the battlefield, you may exert, and or maybe when it attacks, you may exert. And if you do, it deals 4 damage to target non-dragon creature your opponent controls.
Correct.
So I believe that Exert, the way that reads, they haven't explained it, but I think there's a couple options. The most likely is that Exert means the creature doesn't untap during your next untap step. I think that, like, it feels flavor-wise like the most understandable, easy to get. It feels like Exhaust, which is kind of a close theme to Exert.
I'm so tired. Ugh.
Yeah.
I had to punch this guy. I'm going to nap.
Yeah, like the dragon is breathing
like a dragon
fire.
Thing. Yeah, he's on a pyramid.
The other one that I can think of is Exert as a keyword. The single word of Exert is sacrifice a land. That would also feel red and dragony.
Oh, yeah. So, I can see. Yeah, when you attack, you can sack a land if you do 4 damage.
Yeah, that seems pretty powerful, but it also seems like.
I like that. I like that more than just doesn't untap.
Me too. Yeah.
That's you can do cooler things with it.
Yeah, because the other ones that it would likely be, which would be -1/-1 counters, which is in the set. It could be -1/-1 counters.
Put a -1/-1 counter on this creature.
Or maybe 2, I mean, or something. It won't be sacrificed creatures.
That makes sense. That means you only get like 3 effects on that off of it.
It won't be sacrificed creatures because that's too close to devour for dragons.
Yeah.
So I think it's probably the stays tapped thing. But the land thing would be cool if Exert meant sack a land. That'd be pretty awesome.
And then Giant Spider's back. Woo!
Actual giant spider?
Actual giant spider.
Okay, sweet.
And also, Gravedigger's back. Woo!
Yeah. You know what my favorite, think of giant spider just now when you said it? I remember we did a chaos draft a couple years ago with Josh and Jimmy.
Uh-huh.
And I remember opening the plane shift pack.
Okay.
And I think that I opened Ancient Spider, the rare, which is funny that it's only a little bit more powerful than
Giant Spider.
Yeah, but like for limited, it was so sweet. Like, yeah. Ancient Spider. Yeah, yeah. It's exactly what it is. It's green, white, 2 for a 2/5 first strike reach. That's a sweet limited card.
Yeah, yeah. That's really good.
Yeah. It's a lot better than Giant Spider, actually, but it has first strike.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And it's a 2/5. Anyway.
It's slightly better than Giant Spider in every way.
Yeah, it's a rare. Yeah. Giant Spider's a common printed like 9 times.
More than that.
Yeah, a lot of
it and Giant Growth were in that like neck and neck race to see who got printed the most times in a core set.
And then they stopped printing either of them?
Yeah, I wish they, in hindsight, I think Wizard should have made sure one stayed in through every core set.
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
The fact that they didn't have one in every one makes me sad now.
Yeah, there's some of the rebranding with the effective reprints that also makes me a little unhappy. I know the reason, like Elvish Mystic, for instance, I know why that's not Lanar Elf anymore. But
well, yeah, because plural, one's plural and one's not.
Yeah, I know. It's just like still.
I do think Grizzly Bear is cooler than Rune Claw Bear.
Yeah, right. Grizzly Bear. Yeah.
The magicifying things I like less than I like the, like, logically there should only be one elf on this card.
That's fair. So, yeah, that's pretty much what's going on as far as the spoilers go. We'll get more into spoilers in subsequent episodes.
Yeah,
but,
totally.
Time
for our top 10 black cards.
And our top 10 black cards is brought to you by Anchor, the new app which combines Twitter and podcasting. Short form audio bits sharing on one subject daily for 10 minutes or less. I have a show called 10 Minutes of Magic on Anchor. There's another one called Fist Pump Film Club.
I'm debating. Actually, I would love to hear what people of our audience think if I were to start an Anchor show, what it should be.
Yeah, Kessler doesn't want to do a magic show. He always wants to do something else.
We have a magic show.
Yeah,
and then you already are doing a magic show that I can guest on whenever I feel like it. Because I can call in and yell at you on it.
Yeah, it's really fun, guys. I'm playing a game of like basically an extended game of mental magic over Anchor right now with one of our listeners, Brandon S. Russell. That's been really fun. It's a super cool app. I'm just talking about anything and everything magic related. So if you call in and give me ideas, I will share your ideas. So anyway, that is who brings us the top 10. Let's get into our top 10, starting with number 10.
All right, I'm going to start because you launched it. My number 10, and it's number 10. It could be, it's probably more powerful than number 10, but I'm putting it at number 10 because it's kind of a colorless card, and that's Dismember.
Okay, made your top 10.
Yeah, -5/-5 to a creature. You can pay 4 life to make it cost 1 mana. You can pay 2 life to make it cost a black and a colorless, or you can pay no life and make it 3 and a colorless. Just a instant all around, one of the best removal spells in the format as Ben hits his head on the mic. Trying to get water, and this has been a fun episode. I thought about it. There are so many decks that require this to be in their deck to kind of like work. Even Merfolk needs to play this, and until Fatal Push, this was the best black removal spell in the format.
The irony of this being on your list, and spoiler alert, not mine, is just it's over the top because A, you've made the argument to me 9,000 times that this is not a black card. That's the first thing. You always tell me that.
It's not. But where else are we going to put it in our top 10 list?
But
it is a top 50 card.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying it's ironic. Secondly, I've also been the one who's included this in list after list, and you always tell me that it's not good enough and should be something else. This is like what happens every time I try to put this number on a list.
It's time to be there. It's time to be there. This is a modern format where life paying is more important than it used to be.
So, all right. My number 10 is going to be Collective Brutality. Newer card. A card that when it first showed up, we really were pretty convinced that it was good, but I don't think either of us was convinced that it was good the level that it's now been showing up. Collective Brutality has become like pretty ubiquitous, I think, in black decks. It seems to be a 2/2 in like almost every deck that plays black.
I'm disappointed in myself because it does a lot of things that I love.
Yeah.
Which is I can discard Lingering Souls and then cast it.
It's just really good. I mean, I knew that from the time that it was printed that it was going to be great because you can get so much value. I mean, look, we say it every single time we get into the conversation about cheating costs. I just did a blurb this morning on Anchor about cheating costs and how powerful it is. That's like, it comes up all the time. Whenever you can do something without paying mana, you can find a way to do it without paying mana, and it's powerful. It's a good thing, and that's exactly what this card allows you to do.
Yep, I agree.
So, yeah, I think Collective Brutality is super strong.
Yeah. Going into number 9, I am seeing my number 4, and I'm seeing your reaction to it in my head, and it's going to be great. But number 9, Death Shadow.
Okay, that's your number 9, huh?
Yeah, I think, yes, this card might be able to be higher if it was as formative defining every time. Format defining as it is right now, but for a longer period. But right now, it's only been really a real card for the last year and a half. But beyond that, it's really strong, obviously super powerful, obviously deserves a top 10 spot. It does a really original thing, and I definitely am a fan.
It's a little higher on my list, so I will share all of my thoughts on Death Shadow when we get there, but okay. I agree. I think it's definitely interesting. Look, we've had this conversation every time we do a top 10, because there's two ways you can look at the list. You can look at intrinsic power level, where you're like, okay, how good is this card on stats? Like, how actually just good is this card by rate? Mm-hmm. And then you can look at, okay, what's the place in the format?
Sure.
How dominant is the card?
And how historically important it is. Which I like also to add that to a little bit of relevance.
Yeah, which is why, like, when we just referenced the artifact episode, Darksteel Citadel is a very high card for you. It's an artifact land, but it's a very important card in a lot of decks.
Right. And even taking historic, like, artifact lands in general are obviously very powerful. Five of them are banned. There's only one left.
Ornithopter is on your list. So anyways.
Ornithopter is... you and all those guys, you're like, why is there an Ornithopter masterpiece? It's like $60 now, and I should have bought like 30 of them when they were 30.
Oh, it really doubled?
Yeah.
Ugh. All right. My number nine is Ad Nauseam.
Okay.
So there was the conversation was this and Living End were like, where would they fit on the list in my mind? And I ended up deciding to put Ad Nauseam at nine because it's a very unique effect. It does something good. It does something.
Is the only card in the format that really does what it does or can accomplish the thing that it accomplishes.
Yeah. I mean, you can sort of. Every time you look at a format, you can scour the format and you can find what are the things that are the most uniquely powerful. There's a couple reasons that I think Ad Nauseam stands out to me. One, Ad Nauseam is not cheated into play and it costs 5 mana. Like, this is a card that costs 5 and people play it in Modern as like a real thing they're trying to do. It's not like Living End, where Living End is essentially a 3-drop in your deck. I mean, this is a 5-mana combo spell, but people still play this as a win condition. Not even Scapeshift, which is a 4-mana... Well, it's not a 4-mana combo spell. It's really a 7-mana combo spell, but it's not because of all the ramp. Sure. Ad Nauseam is a 5-mana spell that you're trying to accelerate into in the same way you are with Scapeshift, but you're never casting it for 2. It's right. Actually a 5-drop that you have to build your deck around casting a 5-drop. If you can't cast a 5-drop, you can't win. So I think it's interesting. It is really powerful, and... It's uniquely...
I mean, it single-handedly is the only argument I hear from people that should allow Simeon Spirit Guide to stay in the format. I think Ad Nauseam as a deck existing is really cool. I love that Ad Nauseam is a real deck in the format. And that deck doesn't work without Simeon Spirit Guide. Like,
right.
It just is a deck that will die, which would be really sad because I like this deck in the format. Like, everywhere else Simeon Spirit Guide does something, it like is degenerate or just does something that makes that deck unfair. But right here, I think, is the perfect place for it.
Yeah, I would agree. So that is my number 9. Yes.
All right. My number 9, which is on the other side of this.
No, you already did your number 9.
Oh, my number 8. Yeah, cool. I would have figured it out. Don't worry. Number 8. This is a combo section. So generally, if you guys don't know, we sometimes combine multiple cards that are very, very similar because it makes this episode way better than us just doing like... 6 different version. Every fetch land is in the best 5 lands.
Right.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So Gurbag Angler and Tassigur are together.
This is number 8 for you.
Yeah.
Huh?
I mean, they're just big beaters. Like, I think if they didn't exist in the format, maybe Gurbag, like decks that play Gurbag Angler would be a little bit worse. But like, I think decks would find other cards that kind of accomplish these goals. They're obviously very powerful. They're 1-mana 5/5s or 4/5s. Very good. I've played Tassigur a significant amount in this format. Tassigur single-handedly made Dark Confidant worse in
yeah.
the format. Delve is obviously super powerful, and these are, I think, currently the best things you can do in Delve now that Gitaxian Probe is gone and giving +6/+6 is less common than it used to be. But yeah, no, I'm a fan.
They're very good. I have them combined also. They're a little higher on my list, so I will to rant and share my thoughts till I get there, yep. But I hear you.
I mean, in Gurbag Angler single-handedly put Mishra's Bauble on the map.
Yeah.
Patrick Chapin took that Esper Gurbag Angler deck to the Pro Tour right after the Birthing Pod ban.
Yeah.
And like people were like, really, that card? And now it's a $60 card.
Again, like looking back at Mishra's Bauble, I'm just like, I kick myself because I'm like, okay, let's just be real here. Let's let's consider all of the variables.
I got my printed, play set.
This is printed nice. In a bad set. A very, very like short print run bad set. And it's a free way to draw a card. It's a free draw a card.
Yeah.
If it's like, why was that not more obvious? We should have bought 100 of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As soon as Patrick Chapin pointed it out, everyone was like, oh, I should buy them. So I bought 5 for like $3. And then it's just like,
yeah,
it's a good decision.
Yeah. I might be taking those this weekend.
Anytime Patrick Chapin points at a card from,
An old set.
No, what's the set called?
Oh, Cold Snap?
Cold Snap. We should
what
probably.
What was the other one?
Oh, no, that's it. That's it. That's the one.
Next to when he's like, buy La Visa Cold Eyes or something like that?
During my Mad Magic days, I definitely recommended buying the 4-4 for two in white. That Jotun Grunt. And like it went up like $2.
Yeah.
That card's not good. I took that to a GP. It was really sad.
Yeah. There's places to play Jotun Grunt, but a 4-4
in your sideboard, not your main deck.
A 4-4 for two is just not that good. They've just they started pushing rate like so much.
I was like, white Tarmogoyf, guys. No,
I know. Well, that's the whole conversation that we've had with Hunted Horror, which sadly is not on my top 10 list. Like Hunted Horror, a 7/7 trample for two, when you have to like work really hard to make him not have tokens, is not very good. When Death Shadow is just way bigger for smaller.
And like the things that you do to make Death Shadow bigger are way more beneficial towards you than like engineered explosives.
So speaking of Death Shadow, my number eight is Street Wraith. Street Wraith.
I love Street Wraith.
Yeah, it's the 5-mana Swamp Walk 3/4.
It's kind of your dismember because he's kind of a
For pay two life. And
how many times does he? People cast Street Wraith.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Really, it's not a black card because it's not cast 95% of the time, but people have cast it. People have cast it in one in Living End.
It has
with
Fear,
that
though, right?
No, Swamp Walk.
Swamp Walk. That's still pretty black. I would like in play, it's a pretty black card.
Yeah, it's definitely a much, much, much more important card now that Gitaxian Probe's not in the format. I don't know if this would have made my top 10 probably if Probe was still legal, because I think you would always
choose. Because there's only this and Mishra Baubles are the only effects, and like the life pay is really important.
You would choose to play Probe over this card. So it would. I think that this card is very important. And also, like, yes, it shows up as a linchpin card in Death Shadow Jund, and it also shows up as a linchpin card in Living End. It's a free way to draw a card early. I mean, not free, but it's two life to fill your graveyard. There's a lot of things in the format that want to do that. So it wouldn't surprise me if in someone's brew, this is an important card. Like, I don't think that's unreasonable. So that's my number eight.
All right. My number seven,
mm-hmm.
Goryeo's Vengeance.
Okay, Goryeo's Vengeance.
Yeah.
Missed the list for me.
I feel like ad nauseum missed my list. It was actually originally in my five cards that we should like battle off.
Yeah.
I said I had one like defining deck card, and it's no longer on that list because you got to say it, which is good because I don't like it. Excellent. Better. Number seven, Goryeo's Vengeance. This is the best reanimator spell in the format.
Yeah.
And for those who don't know, we don't include the flashback cards. So like Lingering Souls wasn't in our top five white cards, even though it's obviously probably the top three white cards in the format.
Yeah. So Unbearer Rights won't be in this.
So Unbearer Rights isn't in this episode. We'll eventually do we should do that next, like top five cards that couldn't be included in our top 10
like
color
not
list.
Quite, not quite not, multicolor cards.
Yeah, not gold cards, but not, like weird on the edge things. Like, Dismember would maybe a fit on that list.
I feel like we put Birthing Pod as the best artifact and we did artifact.
Yeah.
But that's fair because there's a
artifact is different than color.
Yes, I agree with you. Goryeo's Vengeance is a weird one though because it's not a traditional reanimator spell. It's
You have to do it with either Emrakul or
Gristlebrand. And not only that,
or a Bergamos. It has to be like those are the three main ones, and all of them are insanely powerful to do it with.
Well, the most important thing about it though is the difference is it's one of the few reanimator spells that's an instant, but also it's important that it's an instant because it can target Emrakul when Emrakul has his reshuffle trigger on the stack.
Yeah.
So that's a very, very, very specific interaction that's not normal.
Well, I mean, the other thing, like the Goryeo's Vengeance decks all kill that turn.
Right.
Like, that's kind of the point of what those decks do. It's one of the reasons they're not probably getting cards banned is because it's like a very specific moment that's a little glass cannony and can lose to itself.
Well, it's also so specific too because like take, for instance, the Protean Hulk decks.
Right.
The Protean Hulk decks can't play this card because it's not legendary. So they have to play Footsteps of the Goryeo.
Yes. Yes.
It's interesting.
It puts a really unique restriction. You have at least two decks, if not three decks, that are built off of it. You have the Grishelbrand decks. Just straight up Goryeo's Vengeance Reanimator and Black Red, and then you have the Grixis variant of that plays Jace.
Doesn't see as much play as it
would. No, that's probably the least played of those three.
Yeah.
I think Grishelbrand is the best of those three, but it's slightly less consistent. It loses to itself more.
The fact that it hasn't been banned yet is impressive because it's very fast.
Yeah, and that's one, like, this is one of the decks that, like, Simeon Spirit Guide is more likely to be banned out of the format than necessarily this card, I think, before, because I think this deck is now a turn three deck at best. Maybe there's always the turn two of like Umbrella Rites, Grizzlebrand, turn two this, and then like the two Furias of the Horde where you get the attack twice.
The old school one,
That's like the original list that isn't played very much anymore.
Yeah, but Fury of the Horde, guess what set Fury of the Horde's from?
Cold Snap.
Cold Snap.
You should probably buy Fury of the Hordes.
Yeah.
It's a free attack step, right?
Yeah.
That's insane.
It'll show up again.
Yeah, that's a spec card right there. Yeah, all right. Fury of the Hordes. What's your number seven?
My number seven is Stinkweed Imp.
Oh, he's not on my list.
This is that.
Mostly because you said you would get him put on your list.
That's the irony. That's the true irony. Stinkweed Imp, 1BK, 2CK, 1/2 flying death touch, right?
Yeah. I think
Dredge 5.
Of all of the black creatures in Modern, the one I've cast the most.
Yeah. I mean, look, Stinkweed
Which
Imp...
Which is surprising because you're not supposed to cast it.
Again, Stinkweed Imp would not be on this list. This is the funny part. So Stinkweed Imp, if we had done top 10 black cards 18 months ago, Stinkweed Imp would not have been on the list.
Correct.
Right? Because, and then they unbanned Grave Troll and printed cards to make Dredge sweet, so yeah. Then it became a good deck. But then they banned Grave Troll because There was new cards that make it sweet. But now Stinkweed Imp is on the list because Dredge is good, so now you have to play it because Dredge is good.
Yeah.
So Stinkweed Imp becomes, it's a Dredge 5. I mean, I could have...
And by the way, Dredge is still good. Yeah. Anyone who thinks it's not, you're wrong.
I didn't say any of the other stats on that card. It's just Dredge 5, really, is the only reason
that
it's important.
Whoa.
You think the Death Touch is important?
Yeah, I think it's the best blocker in Modern.
Spellskite would have something to say about that.
No, this is better than Spellskite at blocking, period.
Spellskite costs 2. It has a better ability.
This has flying. And it comes back. How many 3/3s are on the ground? You're blocking one.
Agree to disagree.
What does Spellskite block that it doesn't die to?
Goblin Guide.
Sure.
Wild Nacatl.
Sure. So you have one deck.
Some other stuff.
How many flyers are in this format that you need to block? All of Affinity. All of Infect.
We have limited time on this episode, Alex. Let's keep going.
All right, my number six. All I'm saying is I'm a big fan of your card that I didn't put on my list. You should have taken Dismember. I should have taken that. This is a travesty. Number six, Grizzlebrand, the biggest, best reanimator card in the format.
That's a good one. I didn't put Grizzlebrand on my list.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's really good. He's like the best reanimator. Other than Emrakul, which doesn't count, he is the best thing to reanimate in Magic history.
I asked...
Because like Emrakul is the best thing to cheat in the play, and reanimate is a way to do that. And in Modern, both of those get cheated in with Gloria's Vengeance.
Yes,
but Grizzlebrand specifically in every format is the best thing possible to reanimate because he stays in your graveyard. He hangs out there.
I've been coming up with brewing ideas all week, and I ran across the possibility of, you know, people are doing that Kari Zeb's thing with Breaking Entering.
Yeah, I love Breaking Entering and Crypt Suite.
Emrakul and all that. And so I started thinking about, like, okay, what are the best creatures ever printed? So then I asked the question on Anchor to my listeners. Yeah. I had a few people call in, and I was curious, like, what people had to say. It was interesting. One guy called in and said, while he understood that Emrakul is, yes, of course, pound for pound, the most powerful creature ever printed, because I was like, is Grizzlebrand number two? What are the other ones you guys would put up there? And he was like, you know, I think that in a vacuum, Deathrite Shaman's more powerful than Emrakul because it's a better card in almost every deck it's in.
Sure.
And it does more right away.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, I agree.
I think you have to take utility out of this conversation.
Yeah.
Like this is the I have a favorite podcast, The Weekly Planet, that everyone should listen to. They're good. They're Australian and they do comic book movie stuff. But, they do a like superhero or like fictional character battle off but like you have to put them in, they're both are in a football stadium, football field with nothing else around them. And who would win in a fight?
Okay.
And I think on that, in that specific contest, if Grizzlebrand was fighting Deathrite Shaman in a football field, I'm pretty sure Grizzlebrand wins.
It would be like Arya Stark fighting the Mountain, and we would all be like, oh yeah, Arya, she's got a good slice on the ankle there. She looks, that's really impressive. She's jumping on his back, and then he would just like grab her in his hand and just like crush her in the ground. And you'd be like, oh, that wasn't very fun.
I think Arya Stark could take on the Mountain. I think actually that's a really interesting fight that we shouldn't do on this podcast, but maybe at the end.
Okay, I mean, okay.
Let's continue.
It would be like Bronn. Like he'd be like sitting there like, ah, I'm gonna get a wolf, and I think you're dead.
I think it's more like it's like Bran versus the Mountain, where it's like,
is that what I just said? Bronn.
Oh.
Bran. Okay.
Bran is Bran. There's that would be completely fine if there wasn't a Bronn. This episode is weird. I just corrected on how to say something to you.
Yeah.
But there is like Bronn is Tyrion's like best buddy.
Oh, right, Bronn. Yeah, you're right, Bran. I was trying to say Bran.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, let's get off the game. Okay.
So Grizzlebrand, speaking of brands, pay 7 life, draw a bunch of cards. This is literally one of the best cards ever printed. I don't know how not to put it on my list.
Yeah, it's really powerful.
It's, and there's more things to do with it, like because of the The fact that he doesn't shuffle into your graveyard like Emrakul, which I would say is the reason he's better than Emrakul, is you can do more with him. He's a more versatile, insane thing to cheat in the play.
Yeah, I think, I mean, look, Griselbrand doesn't, he doesn't register for me as a black card because, again, you're never paying him, you're never playing him
for
black mana.
He's got four black mana symbols in his costume.
I hear you, and I don't think what you're putting on your list is wrong. It's just like, it didn't register for me because I'm never casting that card for black mana.
Fair enough.
I'm using a different effect to get it into play. So it could just as easily be four green and do something amazing, and I would be using a black card to get into play. Gloria's Vengeance, to me, is the correct card to make Griselbrand the card.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I get you. So my number six is Death's Shadow, which we talked about already.
Never heard of that card.
Yeah. Death's Shadow, the reason I decided to put it on here, because what we said was true, which is that it is only a player in the format like for the last like year and a half. But I don't think that Death's Shadow couldn't have been good before. I think people figured it out.
Corey said on the podcast, is like, this has probably been the best deck for a long time.
Yeah.
It's just no one had put it together.
And people just figured it out. And when you look at Death's Shadow, it's like, it is...
Which is like my favorite thing about this format. Like the Amulet Bloom is the exact same kind of deck where it's like, there was no new card printed to make Amulet Bloom good when it started doing well. It just like, no one that was good enough took it far enough until that moment.
Yeah, completely. And Death's Shadow to me is like, if you look what Modern has become, it does make sense. Because, you know, something we always talk about is how effects that target deck and player, like if you focus on someone's life total or you focus on what's like in someone's deck, you're not affecting a zone that matters until that zone's at zero. So Death's Shadow is the ultimate card to take advantage of the fact that if someone's focusing on your life total, unless they're prepared to kill you, you can just start at 8 life. You don't really care as long as you're going to win the game by controlling the game.
Right. And the fact that red-blue decks have kind of really fallen out of favor, other than Corey Burkhart, makes it so I think Death Shadow decks can survive. Like, if Snap Bolt Snap was still a thing that was everywhere, like if Splinter Twin was still the best deck in the format, this deck couldn't exist. But with blue and red decks no longer being best buds, you have this, which I think is not even a good thing, but the fact that that's true makes this deck so much better.
Also, like, just think about it. Tarmogoyf gets better the more things you have in your graveyard. And Death Shadow wants you to put things in your graveyard, and you can put things in your graveyard by paying life. And they're on curve at 1 and 2.
Yep.
And you pay life with your lands to fix your colors. It's like...
Well, this is a 15 life format anyways.
Yeah, it's pretty silly. I think this deck plays like 19 lands or something. Or 18 lands.
Well, that's why, like, you know, we've... In your brewing, and like my encouragement this whole time is you should just take Merfolk to the GP.
Yeah.
We're not going to spoil what you might take, but
you
should just take Merfolk. Just because Spraying Seas is so good against Death Shadow.
Like, it's really good.
Like, they only have 19 lands, and all of their cards are one mana. So, like, if you can just cut them off of black, they, like, can't do anything.
Yep.
Yeah. So that was your number six?
Yep.
We're on to number five.
Mm-hmm.
Number five. New to the format. Our spoiler card, which, was pretty great. Fatal Push. Third best removal spell in the format.
This is your number five?
This is my number five.
So I'm just going to say this is my number four.
Okay,
just because we're next to each other now.
Yeah.
Makes me feel like our top five here is going to be pretty...
my four is going to throw you.
Yeah?
If you have my number four as your number four, I would like... I'll give you $5. I don't believe it.
So
Fatal Push, one mana... to destroy a creature of two or less, or revolt, you can do a four or less.
Yeah, Fatal Push is really powerful.
Yeah.
It's still a newer player, so we haven't really seen the format fully adapt to it yet.
Yeah, but I think the last big modern tournament, it was one of the most played cards, if not the most played card in the format.
It's crazy already. Yeah. It's already like the sixth most played card in Modern or something.
Yeah.
And it's powerful. Look, a really good removal spell in black that's not... Well, it is conditional, but only part of it's conditional.
Yep.
So the fact that it has a non-conditional cost that gets rid of most of the best things is...
Yeah.
I mean, this card's right up there. It probably should be higher on my list than it is. We're probably not even giving it credit
yet. It's too new. It's kind of like I had someone tell... Like, you're saying that Logan is your favorite superhero movie of all time.
Well,
or someone recently told me that Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild is the best Zelda game ever created. And, like... Those two statements both could be totally true, but I need a year before I'm willing to say that.
Something I need to clarify.
Yeah.
I did say that I think it's behind The Dark Knight as my favorite of all time.
Fair.
But one thing I will say, and this is just a shameless plug again, but this is a conversation I've been having for the last 72 hours, and I know you'd be into this. The conversation of top 50 movies of all time, your 50 favorite movies ever made. I've been having this conversation a lot because if you don't have to include Citizen Kane and every great movie ever on your list,
well,
but it's truly
say favorite, not best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're going to make your top 50 list. Then you do have to start considering, okay, what were the movies that I liked the most? And I started making the list, right? I started listing it out. And I stopped in the low 70s before I was like, okay, I'm going to now have to really just take a couple days to think about what I missed here.
Yeah.
And Logan was in my list, but something I decided was I'm going to premiere this on Tuesday. I'm going to have a segment on my show, Fist Pump Film Club, called Top 50 Tuesday, and I'm going to start counting backwards. My 50th movie, and I'm going to do one a week for 50 weeks. But I'm not going to include any movies on that list that have not been out for at least 1 year.
Yeah,
so
I agree with that.
Logan and La La Land would both make it for me, and they both are going to have to be suspended because I don't think it's fair to put a movie that high when it hasn't had the time to digest.
There are a ton of movies that I walked out of the theater and be like, oh man, I love this movie. This is one of my favorite movies now. And then like didn't buy the DVD when it came out, never watched it again, kind of forgot it existed. So like, Breath of the Wild is an achievement in game making. Logan is an achievement in superhero filmmaking.
Just filmmaking, period.
In filmmaking, so period. Good. You know, I would watch The Professor and Logan just on a road show forever.
Yeah.
Speaking of, similar to Game of Thrones, I'd watch Arya and the Hound just murdering people for days. But I can't, I need more than a year. That's why I think the Academy Award should award the year before, but I don't think
right.
That doesn't make sense.
That's fair.
But yeah, so Fatal Push is lower on my list right now because of that, but I think it could be higher.
Well, it's four for me.
Yeah, yeah. I think it could be higher if it is, it could be number one.
So my number
Path and Lightning Bolt, I think, were our number one white and red cards.
Yeah.
So I can see Fatal Push moving up there.
Fully. So my number five is Tasker, Gurmag Angler.
Okay. Okay.
Which, yeah, again, like, yeah.
So excited.
So I think, I think Tasker, Gurmag Angler, the reason that they are so high for me, they're a little lower for you, is that they're like, they're cards that are designed to be good in Modern. Like they are made to be the best threats you can play in black. Because think about it. Again, the format is so entirely built on filling your graveyard. Like, that's what the format does. And the format wants you to have more than three toughness. So, like, these cards are picture perfect. And the format wants you to be able to play multiple colors. These cost a single black. They allow you to take advantage of something you're already doing, which is filling your graveyard. And they survive Lightning Bolt. And one of them, on top of all of those things, also has card selection attached on his body. Like, Tasker is such a busted card. That card is so good.
Yeah.
I agree. They're just, and like the fact that they also survive Fatal Push. I mean, they're just good.
Yeah, they're really they're totally good. I don't disagree. I mean, they're on my top 10. Yeah. I have them a little higher just because
I think they're even better now that Fatal Push is in the format, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
Here they are.
Yeah. All right.
All right. My number four.
Yeah, what do you got?
Number four. Best sacrifice out in the format. Probably has killed more people than you're going to give it
Viscera
credit for.
Viscera Seer. You turd. This was like card 27 on my list. I was like Viscera Seer, and then I just like laughed out loud. I was like, there's no way. That's ridiculous.
It's the best sack outlet in the format. Oh. There was a significant while where it was the best one drop in the format.
Greater Gargadon's a better sack outlet.
No, it's not. You're wrong.
Yes, it is.
How many Pro Tour how many top eight decks in the history of the format can you get on your hand? Can you even count to five that have played Greater Gargadon?
Spawning Pits, a better like, sack
maybe
outlet.
Maybe two.
Viscera Seer, yeah. Hey, you're right.
Viscera Seer has gone one card banned.
Yeah, Viscera Seer is really good.
Yeah.
I'll give it to you.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll give it to you.
There, yeah. That's for people who don't know, it's really important in the Malira combo decks.
Are you proud of yourself?
Yeah, I'm proud of it. I got it. I told you a long time ago in this episode, which felt like a long time ago, that you would laugh at me on my number four.
Yeah, well, so our top three are exactly the same then. So it's just a question of order. So I think...
What was your number four again?
Fatal Push.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
So my three, I'm assuming they're probably the same, but I could be wrong.
What's your number three?
My number three is Dark Confidant.
Yeah, my number three is Dark Confidant.
Yeah, I assume. All right.
Yeah. This is the fourth of the... Currently, there are four of five two-drops that are the best two-drops in each color. Dark Confidant is the black one. For those who don't know, Stoneforge Mystic is white, Snapcaster Mage is blue, and Tarmogoyf is green. There are a few candidates for red, and I will say that none of them have really actually achieved that status.
The two top ones have been Young Pyromancer and Eidolon of Great Revel. But Eidolon is such a weird card because of its type that it doesn't feel like it's quite right.
Yeah, and it only sees play in burn. Like, Eidolon would need to be a more ubiquitous card.
Pyromancer.
Pyromancer is
very deck specific,
and then it also isn't that good.
And people for a second there when it got printed did think that there was a chance.
It's also not a rare, which is like a weird sticking point. But imagine if they printed that in Modern Masters 4 and it was mythic. Like all these other cards are like, oh yeah, those are all mythic cards.
Yeah.
I don't think any either. Eidolon or the Great Rebels could be a mythic. That's like Eidolon is closer to me than this is.
Eidolon probably will be a mythic because it's such a strange card type.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say is the third one that I know people have considered before is the Origins card, the 2/1 with prowess that when it enters the battlefield.
That like got played for like a week and then hasn't seen play.
What the heck is the name of that card?
That's why it's not one of the top five.
Well, no, if you think about that card for a second, I wish I could think of its name, but it's like right there in my head. But in any case, that card that I'm talking about, it's designed to basically be that card. Because it's got the same 2/1 prowess. It's got an interesting ability. It creates card advantage. It's just like
not something. Good enough.
Yeah, and it's something like you don't really want to get. You don't want to have to. Like, you don't want to rely on red for that effect. You want Snapcaster Mage to be doing that historically with Gataxian Probe or getting back Aserum Visions or
I'm trying to think like what card, what red type effect. I wouldn't hate like Faithless Looting on a 2/1 for red. I think that would be kind of sweet.
When it enters, you get a Faithless Looting?
Yeah, or when it enters, you get a reverse Faithless Looting even, where like you discard two cards and draw two cards.
Would that be good enough?
Yeah.
2/1 when it enters, you discard two, draw two?
Like, not just because Vengevine is one of my favorite cards, and it would be sweet with Vengevine. I think that would be fine. I think that'd be sweet. I think like some type of like a shock, like a mini... It's the 4/2 that you kill a creature when it enters play. Does
damage. Flame Tongue Kavu?
Yeah, like a mini Flame Tongue Kavu, a shock Kavu.
Yeah, I would say probably what you'd want would be 2/1, Intimidate, and when it enters.
Well, Intimidate's not an effect anymore. It'd be Menace, and bad.
That's what I mean. Sorry, Menace. I think if it was a 2/1 with Menace, and you discard you discard one, draw two. That would be just way too good. You're discarding one card.
Well, that's a card. Like that's what's it called? What's the card called? That's not a creature. It's just a spell to discard a card and draw two. That's like a completely serviceable playable effect.
You're talking about
there's like a few of them.
Yeah. Right. But so I'm saying
so on a creature, I think that like on it, I think I would rather it be first strike. I think.
So a 2/1 with first strike, discard one, draw two.
That'd be sweet.
At rare.
Yeah.
That feels like a card that would be like pushed and powerful and standard and probably good enough for modern and would go down as the fifth one. Because you could play that. It fits what red sort of the reverse looting effect that red's supposed to be doing now. Like that feels like the card they should print.
Yeah.
And for some reason, they don't want to go there yet. I'm not sure why.
Yeah, I don't either. Back to Dark Confidant.
With Snapcaster Mage, that card would be so disgusting. Yeah, discard a card really cool. And draw two.
Yeah, and Lingering Souls. I think that card's really powerful, but I don't think it's... I don't think it's too powerful.
If you could play a deck with four of those and four snaps, like
that'd be really good.
Ugh.
But like Gutshot kills everything in that deck.
Yeah, it's true.
Back to Dark Confidant, who we should be talking about. Would you say he's the best card draw spell in the format?
No. Maybe no.
What card would you say is better at card draw than him? I can't think of one. Like
best card draw spell in the format. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's true. Not card selection, but actual straight card draw.
Yeah. Like Faithless Looting might be better, arguably. Like
Serum Visions because it's more like playable in multiple decks. But that's not selection.
Card advantage is, I think, card draw, not necessarily like.
Yeah, maybe Bob is. Maybe Bob is card advantage because I mean,
you're paying life for it, but like. The reason you have to kill them is if you don't, they win because they've drawn cards.
There's definitely been a weird like revisionist history on how good this card is because for a long, long, long time, this was like one of those like top five cards ever. It was like one of those cards that would show up in every competitive Legacy and Modern list, and it was like staple card in Jund. And then something weird happened around the time that Abzan got popular, and the price started to go down.
Well, Lingering Souls and Tasigur. Tasigur's the big one, because Tasigur and this can't see play together, and so if a deck is playing Tasigur, this can't be in that deck.
Yeah.
Because have you ever flipped a Tasigur with Bob? It's like not a good feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess like a punch in the stomach.
Eight damage.
Yeah.
I just went from winning this to definitely losing.
Yeah.
But
I think it's still really, really, really good. It might be the best card advantage creator because of the rate.
I'm a Jund player, and I just literally put for a while, I was only playing two kind of Dark Confidants. He's really good right now. The fact that like Fatal Push is around, and so now a lot of my deck is just removal spells that are like one or three mana. Mm. Like he just upped, and I cut one Kalidus and I cut the Grim Flayers, and just.
I mean, when
maxed
I was playing
out on Dark Confidants.
When I was playing Superior Burning Cocoa, I mean, that was what we eventually came to, was that just play Dark Confidant. I think it was playing four.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
Like, it's just really good.
Yeah, it's just a super solid card.
Yeah, so what's your number two?
My number two is Inquisition of Kozilek and Thoughtseize.
Me too!
The combo, yeah.
The reason they're combined, it's really just a metagame call. Normally, it's like, I'm going to play five or six discard spells, and it's going to be a mix of these, depending on either how good is Burn, or how good is things that are playing Tassigur, or things that are four mana.
Yeah.
So, like...
They're good right now, too. They're seeing a lot of play right now.
What do you like more, generally? Like, without knowing what the format looks like, if you had to choose...
Inquisition.
Okay.
But it's tough because
I'm a Thoughtseize guy.
So this is what I would do. I always would build with Inquisition as my four of to begin with. I always would build with Inquisition as a four and Thoughtseize as a one or two. But if I'm not playing a deck that's like a heavy discard deck, I'm playing a deck that like maybe plays four of one of them in the sideboard, I'm going to play four Thoughtseize in my sideboard. I'm not going to play four Inquisition.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, because Thoughtseize is the decks that these are amazing against, Thoughtseize is better against, but Inquisition of Kozilek is better against more of the field, I think you can say. I think I like Thoughtseize more, and the same reason that if I were to choose between Lightning Bolt, Path, or Fatal Push, I would choose Path every time. The drawback on Path and Thoughtseize are so much worse than the other options, but being able to just, no matter what I'm facing, always have an answer that will just stop them, like this will work, there's nothing that can kind of get around this, is like really... I'd rather have that in a vacuum, and I'd rather just have that in general.
You mentioned
Path just murders everything.
You also mentioned that starting at 15 in this format is common, and that's because Thoughtseize off of a Fetch and Shock. And that, sometimes I like to not have to start at 15. It's a little nicer to start at 17. So, yeah. Anyway, let's move on to our number one.
How are they going
to
burn you if they got rid of the cards in their hand that are going to burn you out?
Our clear number one.
Liliana of the Veil.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's the best black card of the format. Iconic.
It's funny, every time we do a list, every time we do a countdown, every time we do anything, it just comes down to talking about the same five cards over and over again. How many times have we talked about Lightning Bolt at the top of a list? How many times have we talked about Serum Visions? How many times have we talked about Liliana?
I mean, that's only because we did our top 100 cards ever.
We ranked the Planeswalkers.
And we've ranked one drops, and we've done commons, and we've done Planeswalkers. So, yes, we've talked about these. What's cool about, what I do like about these episodes is our, top 10s end up being really a top 15 cards in Modern because our top 10 through 6 are normally pretty different.
Yeah.
And then our top 5s are pretty much close to the same. And then it's kind of seeing how we rate each other. That's why these episodes are great. Yeah. Those who don't know, Liliana of the Veil is 2 black, 1 colorless, plus 1 discard. Every player discards a card, minus 2 target player sacks a creature, and minus 5.
Minus 6 separate
cards into piles and they sack one. Of their choosing. She's really good. She's format defining. She's the best planeswalker. She is the best performing planeswalker ever printed.
Yeah, because Jace
is banned and everything.
Yeah. And she's not better than Jace, but she's totally different than Jace. She's got a completely different
pattern. They're possibly closer than maybe people give credit to.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. Liliana's really good.
If you look at Legacy, both see a ton of play. Like, it's not like one is just so much better than the other. Miracles is a better deck than Liliana deck, so I'll give that credit.
Well, Liliana also interacts with a different zone, which is, it interacts with, first of all, your graveyard.
They kind of interact with the same zone.
Well, Liliana interacts with your graveyard, which is something that is unique and powerful and sets you up for your big turn four play.
They're it's interesting, because if you take the cycle of life of a card, they both interact with the two opposite sides of it.
Yeah.
Because they both deal with your hand. And then Jace deals with the top of the deck, and Liliana deals with the graveyard. And then they both deal with the hand and one thing in play, because Jace has a bounce effect, and Liliana has a sacrifice effect.
Yeah.
But then Jace eats your graveyard, and Liliana eats it. Or Jace eats your library, and Liliana eats your graveyard.
Right.
Or fills them, whatever, yeah. Totally. They're really actually kind of mirror each other in a kind of a great way. I haven't even thought about that. I like that.
Sweet.
In the story, they're off and on and on and on. So I'm all about that now, even more than I was a hot second ago.
So
it would be a hot second.
That's our 10. And now, before we get into our battle, we're going to battle off our five honorable mentions. We're going to do a couple other things really quickly. The first one is, I mentioned this, and I think this is really fun. And if you are a listener of this show, and you possibly listen to my other show, which is Action Movie Anatomy, where we talk about action movies, you'll find this particularly amusing. I played this for Kessler, and he enjoyed it. I'm just going to play it speaker straight into the mic because we don't want to do all the other stuff.
Straight into the mic.
Straight into the mic. And it's awesome. And the question is, the film The Rock. Do you guys know the film The Rock? Because I do. It's one of my favorite movies ever made. And the question was, here you go. I'm just going to play this right now because it's the best.
Okay, Ben. I want to cross the streams between your multiple media endeavors. So I also listen to your podcast, Action Movie Anatomy. I love it. And I started listening to it because you plugged it on the Masters of Modern for your 50th episode where you reviewed The Rock, which is my favorite movie of all time. So here's my question. If Stanley Goodspeed, a.k.a. Nicolas Cage, and John Mason, a.k.a. Sean Connery, were to sit down at a modern tournament and play a game of Magic, what deck would each of them run, who would win the match, and what would the decisive play be in the final game? I hope you post this, man. If it's fun, let me know, and I can probably think of more quirky things like this. I'm loving the show, man. I can't wait to see what else you do with it.
So that was Brandon S. Russell calling in on my anchor station, 10 Minutes of Magic, which is awesome, and I'm really enjoying doing. Asking a sweet question. Now, Kessler's never seen The Rock. Never actually seen The Rock.
Do I have strong opinions that it's a spinoff of James Bond?
You think that it's the James Bond? Yeah. So
it perfectly fits, Ben. It perfectly fits.
No, I like the theory. It's a good theory. Yeah. So that was Call of the Week. I'm going to be doing one of those every week. I'm going to be taking my favorite call-in of the week. And the answer to the question?
Call of the Week!
Answer the question.
I'm actually going to come with a cool little...
Yeah, well, drop.
Yeah.
Do you have any answer to that question? Here's my answer. So I think that it would have to be... John Mason would have to play some sort of like old school has been working since the beginning deck. So I think he would either be playing mono red. I think he would either be playing mono red or he'd be playing some like rinky dink, like white blue control deck with like Sarah Angel or something like that.
I think, yeah, I think a burn deck is kind of, I agree with that. It's not classy enough. Because in my head he's James Bond, I want to say he'd be playing something more like a mono black kind of like...
He escaped from Alcatraz several times, like back in the 70s. So,
sneaky. I can see John. Like, that's a deck that's just been like good in the format in an efficient way and in a brutal way.
Oh yeah, maybe that's more.
It's just like he like has been playing with the same pistol and the same Aston Martin since 1955.
For some reason, I really like the idea of him playing like an old blue white deck that has like Sarah Angel. He's like convinced that it's still good.
It's either that or like snap paths.
Something like that. And then I think Stanley Goodspeed is going to play probably Infect because he's a poison specialist.
Yeah, definitely Infect. Yeah, I'll give you that.
That's probably what it is. And then as far as the decisive turn, I think there's no question that Mason's going to go for like he's going to go for like the kill with like thinking that he's got it or something like that.
Okay.
And then I think probably Goodspeed has like the free he has like Pact of Negation and good and like Mason's
or
like
yeah like just either of the packs.
He like
depending
doesn't
if
know
he's gender, yeah.
He like doesn't know the card exists or something like that. And Goodspeed goes for the win the next turn. And then they I don't know something like that. That's
just
what
like
I think.
In the Jund world because that's what I'm going to talk to. He just like has Tarmogoyf in play, but like no flying blockers, and he's like I got this. Swings with and they're just like Pact of
Slaughter Pact. Yeah,
and he's just like oh.
And he doesn't even play black in his deck. He just like somehow.
No.
So that's probably That's probably how. And then he loses the game because that's what Nick Cage would do in that movie. He's like kind of. Nah, it's not true. He would save the day. Anyway, that's. Thank you for the call in, Brandon S. Russell.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call in of the week. We're gonna do more of those each week. So go follow me on Anchor. Go download the app and follow 10 Minutes of Magic and call in, and you might just find yourself featured on here.
All right, so we're gonna be quick on this. And the way this works is we will give each other's. We have five cards that are underplayed in the color black in Modern.
Mm-hmm.
These are more like favorite cards. So we do this because. We like cool cards, not just best cards.
Yep.
And we're going to each say a number and then have 30 seconds to discuss it, and the other person will be timing the other person.
You don't start the timer until you've explained
what the card does.
Though.
Correct. And then we're going to post these on Twitter when this episode goes live
Yep.
And battle them off, and whoever whoever wins gets to buy the other person dinner. I have currently not lost. And we've done this like 12 times.
It's because I like sweeter cards than Kessler.
And by that, he likes bad cards. And my cards are my cards are good but sweet.
I'm going to come out right out the gates with just a straight like punch to the jaw right now.
All
right. My number one card is Bitter Blossom. One black, one colorless for a tribal enchantment fairy at the beginning of your upkeep. You lose life and put one black fairy creature token, a rogue token, on the battlefield with flying. Look, guys, I don't think I need to explain to you that this card is super good. The reason it falls on this list is because it hasn't traditionally been, like, actually a dominant card. It's just a good card. It works really well with fairies. It obviously works really well on the rogue archetype that I think is so good. And generally speaking, Bitter Blossom is one of the better control cards you can be playing. It gives you infinite sack outlets turn after turn, or creatures to sack. It's just Bitter Blossom's good. What do you got?
All right.
You just changed it because if you just changed your list because of that.
No, I literally have mine. Do you have yours written down so you can't change them? Perfect. Right, me too.
I would ruin you.
My number five.
Yeah.
This was originally ad nauseum before you put it in your top 10 list. So I did change it then, but I didn't know Bad Blur as well. All right. It is. And I have to get the card up so I can read it. Hold on 1 second. Quickly. Stalling.
Do, 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 do.
There we go. All right. It is Geralf's Messenger.
Good card.
It's a triple black. Creature zombie. Geralf's Messenger enters the battlefield tapped. When he enters the battlefield, target opponent loses 2 life, undying. So that means when he dies, he comes back with a +1/+1 counter on him. Yeah. So that's and he's a 3/2.
Sweet.
Ready?
Good story. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So Geralf's Messenger, well, there's 3 factors. One, he's a zombie, which is really sweet. 2, he's like a very, very, very good value engine. And 3, he's got triple devotion. So I'm talking mono black zombie, devotion. Let's do a bunch of damage. Let's play a Grey Merchant after this and do 10 damage to target player's face, gain a bunch of life. He was also kind of a Kitchen Finks light. There was a time in Modern where it was like, is Kitchen Finks or Geralf's Messenger better? And I think it's time to bring him back. Undying is a very strong ability.
Nice one, Kess.
Yeah.
It's a good card. I don't think it's as good as Bitter Blossom, but, you know, we'll see what Twitter has to say about that.
Yeah, but I think this is sweeter than Bitter Blossom.
I think that you are wrong. Okay, I'm going to go with my next one, and this is an exciting one. Totally off the wall, not even close to as recognizable as Bitter Blossom. It's a card I like to call Marilyn of the Morn Song. Black, one for a 2/3 elf wizard, legendary creature. Players can't draw cards. At the beginning of each player's draw step, that player loses 3 life, searches her library for a card, puts it into his or her hand, and then shuffles his or her library. This is a weird card, but this is a card that like definitely needs to be explored more. It does something totally, totally, totally unique. And also, if you can do it correctly, allows you to control the flow of the game. So you definitely have to have some sort of protection or something in play before this card starts. You have to have a plan, obviously, but you can't find me a card that does this. This is the only thing in Modern that does this. And it's also not outrageous. It's not like playing a 4 or 5 drop. It's a 3 drop. Like, it's a totally reasonable card, and it's an elf, which means you can build around it and play Cavern of Souls. It's awesome. I love this card. All right.
How many times have you cast that card, and the opponent just tutors a removal spell before you get to do anything with it?
Well, I've never cast it in Modern, so...
I haven't either. I've cast it in Commander, and it always is just like...
Just gets killed.
Everyone gets a cool card, and then the last person gets a removal spell, and I'm sad.
Yep.
All right, number 4. Yep. My battle. Let me get to the card so I read it correctly and I don't misuse it. This one's a sweet one. I have this one in the bank. It's Blood Artist.
Oh, one back,
one colorless vampire. When Blood Artist or another creature dies, target player loses 1 life and you gain 1 life, 0/1. Ready, set, go. This is just the best drain card in the format. It triggers so well off of all cards dying. They now have a total of 8 cards in the format, so you can go really sweet and deep into this deck strategy. One of the coolest things you can probably do is collect a company versions of this deck, where then just like eventually just doing anything loses a player 5 life. This card is really cool, really great value engine, one of the best cards to play Aristocrats deck, and the only reason Aristocrat decks ever really work. Plus, he's painting a painting with blood in the picture. The art is amazing. This card's great. That's all. Blood Artist speaks for itself. This card's amazing.
I love Blood Artist. I'm such a fan. Such a sweet card. I mean, Marilyn of the Morn Song is a sweeter card, but Blood Artist is really good.
I don't know. I think you just gave me the round of the round, and I think Twitter will agree.
All right. I'm going to go with this is going to be my... I think this is going to probably be my nice kind of soft middle.
Okay.
You know, buried in the middle here. It's a card called Ghouldra's Assassin. One black for a 1/1 vampire assassin with level up. Its level up cost is black and a colorless. So at level 2 and 3, he has the ability of tap a black and tap him. Target creature gets disfigured. And he's a 2/2. Mm-hmm. And then at level 4 plus, he's a 4/4 that has the same ability, except its target creature gets -4/-4 to end of turn. Mm-hmm. It's 2 mana intensive to be good in modern, except if you play it in a control shell, it's so good. It's such a sweet mana sink. It's a 1/1 for 1 that for like, if you have extra mana, it turns into a 4/4 that grasps of darknesses when it taps. I mean, it's not Deathrite Shaman by any means, but it definitely has like very powerful implications in a format like this. And I don't think it ever gets the respect that it deserves. I think this card's really good, especially because it's a vampire.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
That card.
Ghouldrath's
Assassin. Have you ever gotten lightning bolted after leveling up a creature?
Look, you would never ever do it if they had open mana and you. This is a control card. You would drain
their... like, even if like you just like do that and then they untap, it's bad.
You would drain their hand. Look, Kessler. Just... or maybe you'd play it with Training Ground so that you could level it up for 1 black.
All right, get ready with your timer.
Yeah.
My number 3 is Liliana, Heretical Healer. This is creature Liliana, black, colorless, lifelink. When another non-token creature you control dies, exile Liliana, Heretical Healer. Then return her to the battlefield, transformed under her owner's control. If you do, put a 2/2 black zombie creature token onto the battlefield. Her planeswalker side is +2. Each player discards a card. Minus X, return target non-legendary creature card with converted mana cost X from the graveyard to the battlefield. And -8, you get an emblem. Whenever a creature dies, return it to the battlefield under your control at the beginning of the next end step. She comes in with 3 loyalty. This card is amazing. I mean, like, it kind of plays like a little bit of a mini birthing pod where you get to kind of play this cool game where you have a creature, sack something else with this Viscera Seer that's in my top 4 black cards. Then she comes back, buys you the creature that you sacked, gaining you a ton of value. She plays the Liliana of the Veil game plan of discarding your opponent's hand so they never do anything, lets you discard creatures to your graveyard to bring back. She's just this pure, little succinct, little planeswalker value engine that comes with a free zombie. The zombie just hangs out to protect her.
Yeah, it's a really sweet card. Yeah, it's really good. I agree with you. Oh, Ghouldrath's Assassin. That's a tough matchup for me. That's a tough matchup.
Yeah, the nice thing for you is that you lobbed like your mid card wasn't.
Yeah.
Like, I think you're okay there. Like, yeah. I think that was your, like, I'm just sacrificing.
Yeah. I think Ghouldrath's Assassin is sick, and I think people like that card. All right, I'm going to go with my next one is going to be Relentless Dead, a card that I love that I wish saw more play. This card is so cool. So Relentless Dead is a mythic rare. It is a 2/2 for black and a black with Intimidate. It's a zombie. It has Menace. And when Relentless Dead dies, you may pay 1 black. If you do, return it to its owner's hand. When Relentless Dead dies, you may pay X. If you do, return another target zombie creature card with converted mana cost X or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. This card is really, really, really powerful. And it's the only reason this hasn't seen play in Modern, I think, is nobody's figured out an effective way to make zombies good. There's some crazy stuff you can do with this card. First of all, Scab Ruinator is a zombie. So if Relentless Dead dies and you pay 3, you get a 5/6 flyer onto the battlefield. Seems pretty good to me. There's like 2 different or 3 different zombie lords that are playable in Modern. This is just like a repeatable, when it dies, comes back card. You can get value sacrificing it and paying to get it back. Sack engines. This card's sick, and you know it.
That was my basketball.
You know you love this
horn
card.
Versus the other type of horn. Basketball horn's way better than my like that. I don't know. Yeah. That hurts my voice more. Right.
Come at me, son.
I do love Relentless Dead. I think we have a sweet zombie list in our top 10 black cards. Liliana, Relentless Dead, Geralt's Messenger.
Yeah.
It's like a sweet. All right. You ready?
Yeah.
Let me get to the card art so I don't read it incorrectly, especially this has some weird rules interactions. All right.
Marilyn of the Mournside.
Number 2, Necrotic Ooze.
Oh, sweet!
Necrotic Ooze is 2 black, 2 colorless. As long as Necrotic Ooze is on the battlefield, it has all activated abilities of all creature cards in all graveyards. It is a 4/3. One of the cooler things you can do with this card now is you can play it with our good friend Walking Ballista. But really the point of thing is, if you get 2 cards that have activated abilities that combo off to go infinite in your graveyard, you go infinite with Necrotic Ooze. And there's like 12 different combinations of these cards. It's a really cool value engine-y deck. So right now we're just kind of waiting for the right specific 2 cards to be printed that kind of combo in a way that are also good early game. Because previously the issue is like Triskelion is bad as just a 6-drop you're playing. But now that we have Walking Ballista, that might up the ante. So you just need the right cards.
Yeah, Necrotic Ooze is sick. That's a sweet card. That's a really sweet card.
I was like, I don't think there's any sweet black cards. I'm like,
Yeah, that was definitely, I was kind of wrong about that. All right, so my final card that's going to be going up against Necrotic Ooze, and I'm sorry, Alex, because...
Wait, I have one more card after Necrotic Ooze.
What?
Yep, that was my number two.
Oh, were you just fighting that against...
Yeah.
No, I think you're wrong. What did I just do before that?
We did
I did Relentless Dead. You were just fighting that against Relentless Dead? Because I went first. Yeah, that's what it
was. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this is my last card. So my final card is, I hope it's the same card as yours, because that would be hilarious. I have a feeling it is. I just have a sneaking suspicion.
Yeah, I think it is too.
It costs black.
No,
for
5/5
trample, Phyrexian Obliterator. When a source deals damage to Phyrexian Obliterator, that source's controller sacrifices that many permanents. You cannot bolt me without sacking 3 lands. It is a 5/5 trample horror with some of the sickest card art I've ever seen. I've never had a foil of this card, but this is one of those cards that it's a $31 card, and I would love to own a foil of this card. It's actually probably another one of the reasons that new Phyrexia is so expensive. I didn't realize it was so expensive. I mean, I don't think there's really much to say about this card other than the fact that it's quadruple black for a really powerful card. Like, this is in the same vein as Messenger and Gary and all that. Card's a beast.
Have you ever fought with an Obliterator? Because it's sweet.
Yeah, yeah. Will you like
Dami Raid or Arena?
Yeah, yeah. Or what's it called?
Pit Fight. Yeah, I mean, there's like
the command. Dromoka's command.
Dromoka's command.
With this card is sick.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, card's sick. Mine's cooler. Yours is probably better.
All right.
Mine's black, colorless. Legendary creature, Zombie Knight. Hack on Stormgald Scourge.
Oh, yeah!
You may play Hack on Stormgald Scourge from your graveyard, but not from anywhere else. As long as Hack on is in play, you may play Knight cards from your graveyard. When Hack on is put into a graveyard from play, you lose 2 life. 3/3. The 2 sick things you can do with this guy, the main one is you can play Nameless Inversion and Crib Swap, which because they are tribal... spell or shapeshifters, so you can play them. They are technically
changelings.
Thank you.
They're all card types.
You can play knight cards from your graveyard, and the other one is you can play Knight of the Reliquary. So the deck I want to build out of this is a deck that just mills yourself a ton, do the dredge thing, and then you get this and a Knight of the Reliquary in play, and Knight's big because there's a bunch of lands there. But he just lets you play really sweet stuff. And Nameless Aversion on loop and Crypt Swap on loop is just like very powerful.
Yeah, very good. Agreed. The card's sweet.
Yeah. I didn't even time me.
That's
I don't even get it.
Yeah, you're good. Yeah.
No, you're just because the last card.
Obliterator and Hakon.
You just want to hear me talk about Hakon.
Obliterator and Hakon as a matchup. That's a really good fifth matchup.
Yeah, because
I feel like fans are going to really like both of those cards a lot.
Yeah.
There's no chance that Gul'draz Assassin has a shot. I need to stop pulling my punches with one of my cards. That really should have just been Hunted Horror, and I should have just gone for it again.
Yeah, I think my Garrosh Messenger was probably my weakest, but that was because it replaced Ad Nauseam.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, which I think is fair. And then just like my other 4 cards are
it's okay.
All
if I won, it would destroy the tradition.
Yeah, we have a tradition. Yeah.
So anyway, guys, that's gonna wrap it up.
Yeah.
That's the episode. So last but not least, go find us on Patreon, patreon.com/TheMMCast. Helps us stay in business.
Yep. Follow us on Twitter @TheMMCast.
And and I've said it like 6 times this episode, but I'm loving 10 Minutes of Magic. It's really fun. And
go check it out. It's really cool. I do like the whole kind of app and the whole idea behind it. I'll probably start, once again, tweet at us. Question of the week is, what type of 10-minute mini podcast show should Alex start?
Yeah, definitely.
And by Alex, I mean me.
Because the way it works is if you hear something, you like it, you just record into your phone your thought, you call in, and I hear it, and I can play it on my station. So if Alex and I both had stations of like something the other was interested in, we could call in and yell at each other all the time and feature each other's calls. It'd be really fun. So the more of you guys that get on it, though, the more like... I've had a few MMCast listeners now that have been calling in regularly and posting their thoughts.
Nice.
And that's really fun. It means like I can directly interact in a way beyond Twitter. So go download the app, 10 Minutes of Magic. It's great.
And last but not least, follow us on Instagram.
Yes.
We post sweet pictures there sometimes. It's cool.
Yeah, definitely. So,
all right. Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thank you for your attention. See you later, alligator.